He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Come on, go with me, babe. Come on, go with me, girl. Baby, let's go to the cabin down below. I got a radio. Put it on soft and low. Baby, let's go to the cabin down below.
Cabin down below. Sending that out to the two escapees upstate. So that's the big area of our initial focus. Before I get to that, I want to mention where the main thrust of today's program is going. You know, obviously, driven by reaction to the racist massacre, the nine wonderful law-abiding, God-fearing folks in Charleston, South Carolina, the nation, the candidates, you notice everybody now looking to run the country or running the country, beginning to deal with the issue that I believe is from the bottom of my heart, at the really, I in my fiber, I think that it's the most egregiously aggravating issue in the country, and that's the racial divide. I want to get to that. But first, this maybe not so great escape, the cabin down below. The reports are true, and we'll be finding out shortly. If the reports are true, it looks like the end of the road. The end of the road for the two escapees in upstate New York. Aside from DNA, the authorities found a bloody sock in that cabin down below, just 20 miles from the prison. Maybe they're on foot. I think that's what that means, running out of options. The man who broke the story of the cabin down below, Joe Lotemplio, the original J-Lo from the Plattsburgh Press-Republican, joins us live from there right now. Joe, welcome. So congratulations on your scoop. Tell me what exactly is going on.
Good morning. The search area is now shifted, as everyone knows, to Franklin County. And I got to tell you, it's way worse terrain than it was earlier in Clinton County. There's hills full of trees, thick woods, muddy roads. It's a nasty, nasty area. They're closing in on where they think they had them spotted. They're establishing a hard perimeter, and they're going to hope to push them out to the main road today.
And so tell me how confident, Joe, you are as a veteran reporter who broke the story about this hunting cabin, that this is really it.
The law enforcement people I've talked to today, Geraldo, seem really confident. They're openly saying this is the best lead so far, and they haven't been saying that. And the guys I know think they know right where they are, and it's just 24 to 48 hours before they nab them. So, you know, but again, we've heard this before, so let's hope.
But isn't it different with the DNA and the fingerprint? Have you verified that? Have you confirmed that?
Yes, our paper had confirmed that it was positive DNA from both suspects, and they were spotted, although the guy who saw him couldn't get a real good look at him, but he knows two guys ran out of the hunting cabin. And police seem extremely confident that they got him cornered.
So what do you make of the interesting, got him cornered, what do you make of the bloody sock?
Well, if the way they got here is through an old railroad bed from the Lion Mountain area, which is near the Dannemora prison, and it's a good 12, 13-mile hike along that bed. So they're sounds to me like they are on foot, and one of them's having trouble.
And you think that when they got spotted, then they started running? What kind of lead? When exactly was that they were spotted? Joe Lotemplio of the Plattsburgh Press-Republican on the line from the area where the best evidence so far indicating that they've got the two escapees surrounded, hard perimeter being formed. So when was that? How long passed between the alert and right now?
That happened Saturday, sometime during the day Saturday, when the gentleman saw them at the camp. And they've been mobilizing their forces ever since then. As I said, setting up this big circular perimeter. So it's been, we're going on, what, 3-4 days now?
And so they were pilfering the hunting lodge? Is that how they've been eating?
Yeah, in the area, I mean, this is extremely remote, Geraldo, very remote. And the only way to get into this area where there's a whole string of hunting camps is by ATV, all-terrain vehicles. It's that bad. The main roads are all dirt, and it's pouring rain right now, so they're probably all washed out. But there is a string of hunting camps down there where these guys could literally hop from camp to camp, and inside these camps, which are all empty because the hunting season's in September through early December, they're vacant otherwise, they're full of canned goods, booze, maybe some weapons, so they could hang out there for a long time.
And what do they hunt up there? Just curious.
Deer and bear, mostly.
And is it true that this cabin was owned by corrections officers? What do you make of that?
It was leased by, a lot of these camps are leases, leased by six or seven COs from the area. That's not uncommon. A lot of correction officers have camps up here.
So you don't make a necessary connection between the fact that correction officers owned or leased it and the fact that this guy was staying there, or that they knew about them?
No, that just happened to be the camp where they stumbled onto him. But like I said, many, many CEOs have hurt.
Did you see Joyce Mitchell's husband on the Today Show? Spotty connection. Did you, Noam Layden, see the
husband? I saw a little bit of I can play for you.
Go ahead.
Just a little bit if you give me a second here.
Yeah, all right, here is the husband of Joyce Mitchell, the love-struck corrections, the tailor, the head of the prison tailor shop. Remember, we broke that story that she was the head of the prison tailor shop when it first happened, that she gave aid and comfort to the escapees. But her husband, do you have it? Her husband speaking to Matt Lauer today on the Today Show.
Investigator Cavell said, Mr. Mitchell, your wife has more involved than what she's letting on. What? And that's when he said that she was, she bought apparently two hacksaw blades, a Phillips bit, and a chisel. Oh, my God.
Two hacksaw blades and a chisel, Joe Lotemplio, J-Lo's back. You know, is that all it would have taken? And did she really smuggle it in frozen hamburger meat?
I'm not sure about that one. We're going to look into that one, but... I'm not sure. Nobody's told me that, so who knows?
Would that alone have been enough to cut the hole they cut? I mean, it seems to me that a hacksaw blade is a pretty modest tool to cut through that kind of pipe.
Yeah, not according to the experts we talked to. One of the guys, welding company here, said that if whoever cut that was a free man, he would hire him. Was that good a cut?
That good a cut. And so will your community ever settle back down to the tempo you were used to, Joe?
Eventually, hopefully. It's been a crazy year. And it's funny, the guy who owns the bar up the road here is where everybody's going to get information. Says he's Wi-Fi free and proud of it. You need to come up here in the mountains for some peace and quiet and get away from all that.
Okay, Joe. All right. Joe Lotemplio from the Plattsburgh Press-Republican. They've done yeoman service for all of us. And, Joe, we appreciate it. Thanks a lot. And call us if they catch the sons of bitches. What do I just say?
That's all right.
Joe,
that's what they are.
Yeah, okay. All right, Joe, thanks. I appreciate it.
You want to hear a little more from Lyle from this morning,
sure.
The Today Show?
The husband. Here's the husband of Joyce Smith.
He's talking about the plot, the supposed plot that these prisoners were going to kill him once they got out of prison.
He said, I got something else to tell you. I said, what's that? She said, their plan was they want to kill you. I said, what? She told me that Matt wanted her to pick him up. And she said, well, I never leave nowhere without Lyle. Never. And he said, well, I'll give you some pills to give him to knock him out, and then you come pick us up. She said, I am not doing that. She said, I love my husband. I am not hurting him. And she said, then I knew I was over my head. She said, I can't do this.
So I wonder if it really was as simple as that. They seduced this one, you know, middle-aged, sex-starved lady, the big guy with the big schlong, seduces her. She gets them through the frozen hamburger meat, the hacksaw blade. They cut their way out. She's a no-show, and they really do just set off on the lam on foot. They only get 20 miles as the crow flies, pilfering a line of hunting cabins. Is it as simple as that? So grand an escape, so... modest an ending, if indeed it wraps up today, and it certainly looks like it is. We'll give you the latest update. I want to get enough about this. We'll certainly let you know if anything develops, or if you got any bright ideas, you can call us at 866-HERALDO. Otherwise, let me move on after the short intermission, move on to the story of the day, the real story of the day. Well, you got the cop story is important in New York. The fact the thin blue line getting a little thicker. Mayor de Blasio finally yielding to the concern sweeping even through the populist city council about rising violence, gun violence, and murders in the city. 1,000 or more new cops on the street. A deal supposedly to trim overtime to pay for the 1,000 new cops. We'll talk about that. But I really want to focus on what's going on stemming now out of South Carolina, the epicenter of all this for obvious reasons. The 9 innocent, wonderful people slaughtered in that church massacre now leading to igniting, really, a whole national discussion, not only to dump the Confederate battle flag, what we were talking about yesterday, but also the whole notion of race relations and the great racial divide in this country.
From New York, for New York, live, local, on it, Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
This horrible thing happens Wednesday, and you know, you have
the guy, the garage guy. What's his name?
Coming from where you came from.
Mark Maron.
Maron.
You know, trying to
define yourself. Lucky him, score a big exclusive with the president of the United States.
In terms of racial relations.
His podcast is huge. He's one of, I think he might be number one, number two most listened to podcast.
Well, first of all, I always tell young people in particular, do not say that nothing's changed when it comes to race in America unless you lived through being a black man in the 1950s or 60s mm-hmm. or 70s. It is incontrovertible that race relations have improved significantly during my lifetime and yours, and that opportunities have opened up and that attitudes have changed.
Yeah.
That is a fact. What is also true is that the legacy of slavery, Jim Crow, discrimination in almost every institution of our lives, you know, that casts a long shadow. And that's still part of our DNA. That's passed on. We're not cured of it.
Racism.
We are not cured of.
Clearly.
And it's not measure of whether racism still exists or not. It's not just a matter of overt discrimination. Societies don't overnight completely erase everything that happened 200 to 300 years prior.
All right. I think that the president really finally stepping up to the plate. He did it in 2008 with a major speech, and the major speech in 2008 was motivated by criticism of his relationship with the pastor, Jeremiah Wright, who was very obnoxious in many of the views that he proclaimed, the pastor and the rap on President Obama, then candidate Obama, Senator Obama, was that how could he sit in that church and in those pews for 20 years and hear Reverend Jeremiah Wright spewing what was essentially anti-white rhetoric that was in its own way hateful. So the president responded with a very powerful speech back in 2008, then totally dropped the ball for the rest of the first his first term. And the first half of his second term, and only now motivated, as so many are, by this massacre. It just seems to me that the racist Judas, Dylan Roof, the wannabe Charles Manson, what he did rather than unleash race war is, I think he had exactly the opposite impact. He's gotten the nation talking about race. Now, bravo to South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley advocating the removal of the Confederate battle flag from the grounds of the state capitol. I mean, who saw that coming? I mean, I was down there, and this is almost out of nowhere. First, it was Mitt Romney. you know, he led the way, no doubt about it. But like the general reaction to the, you know, the horror at the church massacre, you know, shown by the folks in Charleston, South Carolina, the governor now demonstrating compassion, inclusion. She's reaching across the racial divide to heal her stricken state. And it's of interest to note that she herself, Nikki Haley, a woman of color, I think consider a person of Indian descent, a person of color, South Asian. You know, she represents the changing face of South Carolina. It makes me think she would be a terrific candidate for vice president, doesn't it? I mean, wouldn't she be a, you know, in part, she could offset the historic nature of Hillary Clinton's run. She's a lot more accomplished than, say, Carly Fiorina, who, you know, got booted out of that job she had in
Hewlett-Packard.
But Nikki Haley, good for her. You know, the fact that she came around late in the bowl game, I don't care about that. You know, what goes around came around. I also want to give a big shout-out to the Arkansas-based Walmart for their decision to discontinue selling Confederate flag merchandise. Good for them. Lindsey Graham also changing his mind. You know, when I was down there, he said it was a discussion we South Carolinians have to have. Well, I guess he had it because now he's for taking the flag down. And I always want us to remember that who was the first, you know, most important voice in taking down the Confederate battle flag? It was Mitt Romney. He did it not just was he first after the church massacre. He did it back in 2008. I forgot that. I wonder if Barack Obama even said it back in those days. So bravo to, you know, Mitt Romney. He said it again, obviously, right after the church massacre. Good for him. So this is where I want to go. This is the discussion I want to have. And I want you to join me at 866-RALDO. I see the phones blasting already. That's good. It's going to be about you and me. And we'll talk about, you know, race. It's not a comfortable subject. It is, though. Like I said, and I can't say it enough, I also want to say something about what Bill Maher said about this racist watching Fox News. If I was in the room with Bill Maher, I would have smacked his ass. I'll tell you that.
Geraldo, live, local. Today's most important New York stories, only on 77 WABC.
Dave Clark 5, my first concert, a junior at the University of Arizona, and the Dave Clark 5 came through Tucson, my first concert.
Huh.
Here comes summer. Okay, I'm going to get to your calls, and they are sensational. I see them lining up. I'm going to get to them momentarily at 866-Geraldo, talking mostly about race and all of these developments at a breakneck pace that are happening. Let me just flash back to the escapees upstate and some other law enforcement issues, including the new cops, with my dear friend Bernard Carrick, the former police commissioner, corrections commissioner. First of all, Commissioner, thanks for coming on. What about the escapees? Looks like they have them.
Well, listen, they're on their tail. It depends on how far behind them they are. You know, evidently the DNA is theirs, and they were in the cabin, so they should be right behind them, I would imagine. So look, I said this in the beginning. It's only a matter of time. They'll get them. You know, let's just hope they don't do something stupid.
Well, that's what I want to ask you about that. You know, a lot of these hunting cabins, they just store the weapons up there. If I was a lifer going to go back now to solitary and you know, live out my natural life with prison guards hating me for humiliating them, I think I might just fight it out.
Well, they're going to fight it out. I don't see them giving up. You know, they're going back for life. You know, who knows, depending on what they do, you know, it could be worse. So they're going to fight it out. And my concern is that they get into one of these cabins, get some weapons, or find somebody in a cabin, take them hostage, take weapons, And then, you know, you have a hostage situation. You have threats against that, against the officers, you know, doing these searches. That's my concern right now.
All right. Commissioner Bernard Carrick, former commissioner of the cops and corrections. So 1,000 new cops. The council prevails over the mayor. Your thoughts?
I don't know what they're thinking. The police commissioner says he needs more cops to secure the streets of the city. Who are they to disagree? I don't know what to do. I don't even know what they're thinking. I can't even answer for that. I think the police commissioner should get what he says he needs. Crime is up. Violence is up. Shootings are up. Homicides up. Okay. You what? You don't need more cops? I think he knows best. Let him do his job.
How many cops did you have? Now, this will raise the force to 35,800. How many did you have?
I have 41,000 uniformed. 41,000 uniformed and 14,000 civilians.
You think we're heading back there?
I hope so. I hope so. Otherwise, you're going to see a continued increase in crime.
So was Mayor de Blasio just blind to what was going on outside, or was he just embarrassed?
Look, I think a little bit of both, you know, but I think he's coming to the reality. You don't have a choice. The statistics speak for themselves. The shootings are up. Shootings go up. Homicide goes up. You got to keep the people in the city safe.
Did you hear that a lot of cops, rather than do the extra patrols or overtime for de Blasio, are throwing in their papers, retiring?
A lot of guys are leaving, and you know what? They're leaving. It's not about, you know, nobody's pushing them out because they're making them work overtime. I think a lot of guys feel they're not being supported by the city. They're not being supported by the administration. And this thing going on right now where you have police reform advocates and council members against hiring more cops, it's another slap in their face, basically. So I could see why a lot of guys are leaving.
And so what about cops in terms of their confrontations on the street? You think the behavior has changed?
Listen, they're going to do their job. They're going to do their job no matter what. They're going to respond to calls like they're supposed to. You know, the problem is they're worried about being indemnified by the city. They're worried about being supported. They're worried about the stop and frisk restrictions. You know, so they have a lot to worry about.
All right, so what about what they're worrying about on Rikers Island? Now the de Blasio administration is agreeing to settle this this beef they have with the feds, the federal government suing the city. Now they're going to put in something like 7,800 surveillance cameras in Rikers. Everyone's going to, all the guards are going to have to videotape every time they have a jail cell extraction, et cetera.
Hey, listen. Okay, first, the U.S. Justice Department didn't really, they didn't have any choice but to come in and do what they're doing. Because the management of Rikers over the last decade has completely diminished to the point that the inmates are running the asylum, there's civil rights abuses, according to the Justice Department. They don't have a choice but to come in and do what they're doing. The reality is, if the city was doing their job, and the Department of Investigations did their job, this wouldn't have happened. This wouldn't be going on right now. And this whole thing about they're going to add more cameras, they're going to create new reforms, new policies, they're reinventing the wheel. This was all done in the mid-90s to the point that we had one of the most successful and efficient correction systems in the nation. And they blew it, and they threw it all away over the last decade. So they're going to have to do something to quell the violence. You know, officers can't walk around the housing area and let people throw urine and feces in their face. And then they also can't beat down inmates and you know, put inmates in a cell to the point that they suffocate or you know,
kill themselves.
So there's major problems. I feel bad for the officers that work out there. They have an enormous job to do, a dangerous job to do. I don't think they're being supported by the city, but I don't think the Justice Department has a choice right now.
And did you hear Ray Kelly, your successor, you know, really blasting the de Blasio administration, saying they're trying to minimize the crime wave, saying, it's only 10 precincts?
Yeah, I did hear that. Look, Ray's got a point. Shootings are up. Shootings goes up. Homicides up. It is what it is. The stats speak for themselves. Which is why I think Bratton needs more cops.
Did you ever, when you were locked up, consider taking your own life?
Yeah, there was a point in solitary confinement. You know, that's when you're at your lowest, and you you know, when you're in a position like that, it's hopeless. There's despair, there's paranoia, there's anxiety, and beyond anything, it's beyond anything you could imagine in solitary, which is why I'm against it unless it's actually really needed.
So what would you do with these two guys if they caught them?
Well, first of all, what I wouldn't do is I wouldn't put them in an honor dormitory where they will walk around to be enclosed and have unrestricted movement or unescorted movement to certain parts of the facility. You know, one of my attorneys made a good point. When I was in solitary in the MDC in Manhattan, I was basically chained up like Hannibal Lecter without the mask. That was me. These guys are walking around a housing area with civilian clothes on, unescorted.
And they're convicted killers, and you had that lame correction.
Come on, man. It's ridiculous. You know, who put that program together should be fired.
That's a show. Thanks, man.
All right. Talk
appreciate
to you later.
It. Renaud Carrick, a wonderful man, former police commissioner, former corrections commissioner. Take one quickie from Rich in Newtown. What's up, Rich?
Hey, how are you? I appreciate you picking up the call. Listener Aldo, I was listening to you speaking earlier about the flag in the South, and to be honest with you, I'm really not into the flag in the South. I think they kind of represent the distaste for the Northerners, too, with it, but I don't care one way or the other about it, and I'm not into guns, but I'll tell you, just going all the way back to Missouri, I think we're being manipulated. Who told the National Guard? The governor talked about the National Guard 3 days before the grand jury came out. Who told the National Guard to stand down the next day? And then why they make the grand jury decision come out in the evening? So I really do. I mean, this is just my personal opinion. I guess I'm asking you your opinion. I think Obama, you know, he's used the N-word intentionally. I think that whole flag direction that we're going in, instead of those beautiful people who told us about forgiving each other and we're Americans, I think he's pushing people's buttons. I think there's going to be a lot of people that resent black people because they're watching cities be burned down, and what are they doing? They're talking about getting rid of a flag? Come on.
All right, there's Rich's opinion. What's yours?
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-Geraldo, 77-WABC.
Okay, talking about the flag and then some, race in America, what to do, how the president handling this. We had a very, very critical caller, Rich it was, just before the commercial break. How do you see it? Let's go to our pal Ferris in Connecticut. Ferris, how you been, buddy?
Buenos dias, bro.
So what's up?
Hey, I'm quick to criticize Obama when he deserves it. Now
you are indeed, yes.
I'm here to praise him. His exercise of his First Amendment rights of free speech are admirable. And he brings a level of maturity. Now, I don't know who wrote the words that came out of his mouth. They come from Valerie Jarrett's speech writing group. But the important thing is...
How do you know that? You just made that up.
No, I know stuff, Geraldo. You know me.
All right. So let's say someone wrote it for him. He still said it. So what about what he said?
Military intelligence officer.
Okay, Ferris. Okay. Stick to the point.
Don't doubt me.
All right, I'm not doubting you.
Now, here you go.
What about what he said?
Here's the story. When he says, and we enjoy the same right, that we're all adults here. If we don't get adult on this topic of race, and I will tell you, when I...
It's enough with this, please. You wear me out. So what's your point? We bleep you. All right, what a dope. Ban Ferris for a while. I mean, he knew what he was doing. That's out of line. Here's Steve in Long Island. What's up, Steve?
Yes, I'm going to point out some hypocrisy and selective outrage. Number one, there's seven southern states that have the Confederate flag in them. State flag, seven. Number two, prior to 1861, what flag flew in the United States when we had slavery when we were 100 and something years old? Wasn't the Confederate flag, it was the American flag. What flag after 1865 five flew on.
You know what they're asking now? You know what they're asking now, Steve? They're asking now, are states that fly the Confederate flag committing a hate crime? That's how far this discussion has come in 1 week. We'll be back after the news. Stay tuned, 77 WABC.
Where New York comes to talk.
You think that I don't even mean a single word I say. It's only words, and words are all I have to take your heart away.
The Bee Gees' words. The president creating an absolute bombshell of a national discussion by using the N-word. And now, you know, what is appropriate? It's a fair discussion to have, particularly in light of everything that's gone down. Welcome back to 77 WABC. Rich, thanks for your patience. Holding on, White Plains, what's up? What are you thinking about?
Hey, Geraldo, how are you? I know that everyone in the media loves to talk about race, but I can't believe the gorilla in the room that everyone's avoiding, and that would be handing at least a modicum of culpability to the president for his, who is the most racially divisive president we've seen in history. And nobody seems to want to say, hey, you know, maybe it's your, you know, a reacquaintance with the racial issue that we haven't spoken about for 50 years. He's basically set the country back 50 years.
I don't see how you say that. By what? By mentioning that we have a racial divide? Come on.
Everything's about race with him, Geraldo.
Oh,
everything.
It is not. Come on, Rich, please. Everything's about race. My criticism is not enough has been about race. Not enough has been about race. I mean, race, why, I think that when you talk about all of these, you know, the bloodshed in the inner city, that's about race. When you talk about the public education system, that's about race. There's so much. I mean, maybe I got a guy, maybe give us some answers. He just wrote Race Pimping. Talk about that. The multi-trillion dollar business of liberalism. Written by a man named Kevin Jackson, who happens to be an African-American. Interesting. We welcome you to the program. Hey, Kevin, how you doing?
Doing good, Geraldo. You caught me a little early. I was supposed to come on later. I was still burning my South Carolina flag.
Oh, I hope you didn't scorch your fingers. So what, you think the president is taunting America, saying I can say this word and you can't?
I think he was. Yeah, I think there was a bit of that. I also, to your point, it was funny. You were about to talk yourself into the death spiral because the guy's right. We're spending a lot of time, inordinate time, talking about race, and it's in undertones. And, you know, this racial tension that Barack Obama talks about, it's funny. You know, you were about to touch on education. There's a racist system. The system that disproportionately doesn't graduate as many black kids from college, drops out more black kids from high school, and so on, run by liberals, because it's certainly, there's nobody in education that would say, oh yeah, it's a conservative enclave, and we don't talk about how that system is disproportionately affecting blacks. You know, all of these systems, you look at Social Security, disproportionately affects blacks. We don't get to get it. We don't reach it. Bad neighborhoods disproportionately affects blacks. Who's put them there? So I would love, I welcome this race discussion. I'm not afraid of the Confederate flag. I'm not afraid of the race discussion in any way, shape, or form, because we've always had the race discussion. We just had it in one, it's unidirectional.
You know, you're right. The bigger issue remains that Obama is a sitting black president who's very used to the black race is the reason he is president, continues to discuss the racial divide. That is telling. This is a subject he simply will not allow to die, despite giving black people nothing. I mean, do you feel this harshly against the president?
I do. Look, Geraldo, first of all, Barack Obama would not be president if he went by Barry. He used race to get elected, and that's okay. You know, if the country, by the way, I never, as a kid growing up, and I'm a product of the 60s, I've never.
Where from? Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in a little town called Brady in that racist southern town of Texas, you know, southern enclave, and we had no race issues. You know, no riots, anything. It was a you know, amazing way to grow up. And I grew up on a big cattle ranch. And my friends were a bunch of white guys that talk like this here, you know, and had Southern flags. And we hunted together and did all kinds of stuff. So it was when I moved and got into adulthood that people started saying, hey, Kevin, you're special. You're black. I'm like, why am I special? Oh, because you need help. And really, last time I checked, when I got up at 4 in the morning to milk cows and go, you know, to help, you know, do the things on the ranch, and there was nobody there to help me. Government wasn't there. So I grew up with this very different, you know, walking in the black and white world and living in the rich and poor world, because my family was poor and we worked for rich white people. But I knew about accountability. And we're not teaching that. And now, right now in schools, we're telling black kids, if you are bad, we're no longer going to hold that against you, because you know what? You don't have daddies, and you don't have both your parents, and you have extenuating circumstances, so you can be disruptive and all that. We tell them, hey, you know what? If you score a 10-10 and the Asian kid scores a 13-80, we're going to call that the same for right now. So we coddle, and we do all these things supposedly to help black kids. But you know what, Geraldo? When you get into the real world, the employers don't say, hey, listen, black kid, I know you're affirmative action and I'm supposed to treat you and Yang the same, but I know Yang's actually smarter than you. That's our problem. And, you know, it's like the book that Jason Wiley wrote, Stop Helping Us. There's something along those lines. Stop helping black people.
Please stop helping us.
Yeah, please stop helping us. We don't need your help. The idea that you want to help, if you wanted to help me temporarily, I accept. If you want to help me because you find me a project, I resent that. This girl in HuffPo wrote an article, Allie Michael, and she says she doesn't want to have white children because she doesn't want to propagate her white privilege. Allie, it's racist that you even think you have white privilege. Because your skin is white, I'm supposed to feel inferior, and you don't want to have children because you're worried about the impact it'll have on mine that graduated from Wharton, and the other one graduated from my alma mater, and he works at Ernst & Young. I don't think my kids are worried about you, white girl.
All right, hold on there. Kevin Jackson, Race Pimping, the book, The Multi-Trillion-Dollar Business of Liberalism. I want you to talk to a couple of my callers. Here's Ralph. Ralph, what do you think about what you hear?
Geraldo, good to talk to you. Kevin, unfortunately, you are the exception. Because I'll tell you something, until we get around, because the president uses a word that I've heard on the street countless times, and many times I have little people with me that I don't want hearing that, but I have to put up with it. So the president uses this word to make a point. Isn't it silly that we sit around and saying stupid juvenile terms like the N-word? We're afraid of a simple word that's a coarse word. It could be termed a hateful word, but we're so damn afraid to use it. Until we can have a blunt conversation about race in this country without platitudes, we are sunk. We're just going to go round and round like a merry-go-round.
Ralph, I completely agree. You, Geraldo should be able to say that word in the context of what Barack Obama presented.
I don't want to say it.
Well, no,
I don't want to say it. To me, it.
Well, you know the thing is, you know the thing
sticks
is,
in my craw, and I don't like it when black people say it either.
Well, look, it isn't about liking it. I'm saying if we're discussing it in the context, and we're dancing around it, going the N-word.
You can say mother effer, yeah. Also, you know, you can say a lot of things that'll shock people. What's the point of it?
Geraldo, Kevin, just for one moment, I can't stand the word. I hate the word. I never use the word. That's I want to make that clear. But in order to make a point, the president, I think in a certain context, he wanted to say it to be hip. But he said that word. It was very, very thought. It was well thought out. He used it to burst through these stupid divides and these stupid taboos.
Oh, but I tell you one thing.
Maybe we can agree on that. But look, he used it because he wanted to say, I'll say it.
Thanks, Ralph.
After telling people that we should be saying the N-word, to Geraldo's point, that nobody wants to say that word. Look, I don't care. Words to me are meaningless. It's what's behind the words that mean something. Black people say it all the time.
I remember
when
my last fist fight with a neo-Nazi. Like, I think I didn't. Who's this? Who's Will in the Bronx? Will, what's your story?
Hey, how you doing? Geraldo, I don't know why you're having these people on the air. These people are not the racists we're talking about. We're talking about the neo-Nazis and the Klans that influenced that young man. This guy walks in and shoots black people, and you're talking about their poverty situation. He's the guy that was the criminal, not the black guy shot. Secondly, let's do the neo-Nazi thing and the Klan thing. Why are you avoiding that? Have them on so that people can hear what it sounds like, what it tastes like, how evil and crazy it is, man. That
All right, Let me let Kevin Jackson respond.
Hold on. The thing that set this guy off was that young white lady saying she want to be black. He didn't hear that. See, racists don't hear that. They hear that she want to be with black men. That's what racists hear.
You know, look, you can.
Well, wait a second. That's an interesting point he makes. You think that that's what ignited the fury of the racist Judas mass murderer, Kevin? You think he was? That lady posing as black?
Some of the points are okay, but I disagree. Look, we are in a post, supposedly the post-racial America. Geraldo, this millennial generation, and he certainly fits, is the least racial of any generation of Americans. They don't, and this is a Pew study. It's been backed up by Rasmussen and others. These kids don't, I think 95%, they interracially date. They don't care about interracial marriage. They grow up playing together without the racial tension and on and on and on. And I don't think there's any argument that we have raised the least racist generation of kids today. The problem is they grow up at 3 to 5 years old playing T-ball and going all through the sports programs, and then they hit that gauntlet of adulthood. And then suddenly they become separated. That kid finds out that Saida Gundy, whatever her name is, says, hey, white boy, you are a problem in society. And he's going, I haven't been a problem up to this point. And on and on and on. They say, he's got the issue. He's got privilege. He's got all these other things. He grew up like everybody else. There's no privilege for him.
What is race pimping, Kevin? What is race pimping?
Race pimping is when people like Elizabeth Warren decide they're going to get privilege by faking who they are. Race pimping is when people like this girl Dolezal that says, I want to help black people, but she's not helping black people. She's helping herself. Race pimping is when somebody like Barack Obama will straddle the line of race. When he's with white folks, he gets from them. When he's with black folks, he wants to be down. That's race pimping. How about you just be genuine? How about you just be Geraldo? Take me as I am, like it or not. And this is who I represent. You've never faked being another nationality or whatever. You proudly present who you are, and I believe that's Puerto Rican and Jewish. Yeah, I've never heard you pimp. I've never heard but Al Sharpton running around.
That's what I was going to say. When I had the last fight I had with the neo-Nazis, the guy, he said, you're a dirty Jew and a spick.
Yeah, so he got a two for that.
And then that's when I hit him.
Good for you. He didn't realize you were
I went to jail.
Shape,
good for me. I went to jail. All right. I appreciate Kevin Jackson is the author. Race Pimping, the Multi-Trillion-Dollar Business of Liberalism is the book out now. Kevin, come back. Excellent guest. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, Geraldo. Take care.
All right, man.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
You know, this country, unfortunately or unfortunately, was founded by slave owners. We've come a long way in my life.
What about those other Confederate symbols across
the country? Is Lindsey Graham being interviewed right now on CNN?
If I were in Mississippi, I would vote to change the flag. But I'm not in Mississippi. But if I were in Mississippi, I'd vote to come up with another flag in light of this shooting. That's what I would do, but I'll leave it to the people of Mississippi. But if I were there, that's what I'd be urging. I've got my hands full taking down our Confederate flag and moving it to a museum. I can't fix every problem in the world, in the state, in the nation, but we can start with the flag. It needs to come down. It needs to go to a museum, and South Carolina needs to get this right. And I'll do whatever I can, along with my colleagues, to get the number of votes necessary.
All right, so this Senator Lindsey Graham... just now live, he's really firmly advocating the removal of the flag. His position has shifted dramatically since he and I spoke face-to-face Friday morning. So this is Tuesday, right? Tuesday, so in that long weekend. And you can call it, I don't know what motivates people. I mean, is it because the tide has clearly turned against this thing, this symbol now being widely regarded as odious? I mean, last week it was nostalgia. Now it's odious. Okay with me. Like I said, I don't care what makes people change their mind. I care about the fact that he has changed his mind. And I like Lindsey Graham a lot. And I saw Trump also now saying relegate the flag to a museum. Are they all now jumping on board?
Almost all of them. But, you know, it's not done deal yet. Two-thirds of the South Carolina legislature has to vote to take it down. Both houses. That's not going to take place until probably maybe even the wintertime unless they call a special session because they're out of session already.
I wonder
So it could change. Feelings could change very quickly come December. People could say, well, wait a minute, I've rethought this. And so it's not so clear it's going to be taken down.
Of course. It's 2 weeks ago, we were talking on black on black crime, talking about the homicides in Baltimore. Today, we're talking about white racism and the, you know, these attacks on innocent black people. It has shifted the discussion. Obviously, I think these are combined. These are the same topic. And I disagree with Kevin Jackson, the guy from Race Pimping on that one. I think this is a very, very big issue. I think we should talk more about it. Lindsey Graham, though, very, very strong. And I like him. Remember, I met him before I saw him in South Carolina, where we spent some quality time together. I met him at 21 when he came to talk to some high-rolling Republicans at John Catsimatidis, Big Cats, the billionaire, you know, Gristidis owner, guy who ran for the Republican nomination for mayor. Unsuccessfully, he has a radio show now. I like Cats a lot. Anyway, he hosted and is hosting all of the Republican hopefuls, and I met Lindsey Graham then, and I was very, very pleasantly surprised by his moderation in all things, including immigration reform. And now he is very firmly, you know, he's dismissing, you know, all of the people who question his Johnny-come-lately status on this issue. I don't. I don't care what brought you, when you got there. I only care where you are, and I like where he is. And I'm telling you, I think that he would be an excellent president. But on the other hand, if they're going to be one candidate from South Carolina, I think the Republicans would be well-served to have Nikki Haley, the governor, as the vice presidential nominee, a woman of color, smart, sharp, experienced, running a big state that's becoming increasingly industrial, getting it when it comes to trade, relations with unions, so forth. I think that she's a real comer. But this issue, clearly, I mean, with breathtaking speed. And I think, I tell you this, Noam, if they don't have a special session of the legislature, then I think South Carolina will suffer. This whole thing will be drawn out and into the summer months. Anything can happen, up to and including boycotts. I bet you thought I was going to say disturbances, but I think that that's the real cloud, is the NAACP says no more sports teams, you know, no more conventions in the state until they do that.
7WABC.
Or Dixieland, I was born early, Lord, one frosty morn. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Holy, glory, hallelujah. Holy, glory, hallelujah.
Is in the building. Greg in Pennsylvania, thanks for calling. Greg, what's on your mind?
Hey, Geraldo, you have to get your mind out of the ghetto, and I'm going to explain to you why. Modern-day racism is a creation by the Liberal Democrats, and I'm going to give you a good example. We live 80 miles outside of Philly, 80 miles outside of New York, in South Central PA. We all get along. We all work hard. We don't have a lot of people on welfare. We have Hispanics, whites, Blacks, Asians. I'm going to give you a real quick example. My son graduated high school in 2004. There were three black kids in his 350-person senior class.
Three?
Guess it, three. It was very white at that time. It's not that way anymore. Guess who was the king of the court? The one black boy that was in his senior class was the king of the court, voted by his fellow students and teachers. He also was most likely to succeed.
If you had one transgender, that one would have made it.
Okay, I'm just,
the kids are so politically correct.
I'm going to tell you why. His family moved to our area. We're hardworking people. And they got two, three jobs to survive. They moved from a South Philly ghetto. They did not want their kids growing up there. And they did. They also, I talk to them all the time, feel just like Kevin. Kevin was right on point. You should get that book. I think it'll give you some perspective. You need to talk to some people outside of Manhattan, you know, and get
well,
into
here,
the
I got an email. I got you. Nice call.
Let me give you another example.
All
my
right,
wife quick. Works with a young lady. She has three kids. She makes $15,000 a year. She gets health benefits, and she works a job from 4 to 10 after that 7 to 3 assistant teacher's job. So where we live, everybody just pulls their weight. They pull the wagon. They work hard. And guess what? When you work hard, there is no color. It's character. You know, it's the content of your character. Now, you switch that, and you move to these intern camps at these ghettos, these welfare ghettos where nobody works. There's no incentive. There's no goals. I mean, my gosh, what a difference. You know, when you look at where we live and you look at Baltimore City, and it's a sad thing, and it's a creation. It's race pimping. The liberal Democrats.
33 homicides in the last 30 days in Baltimore. Greg, good call. Thanks. I appreciate it. Here's a lady, Rosemary wrote me. She talking about President Obama. I'll tell you, he has accomplished what he set out to do, create a race war, which is on the horizon, my friend. And here's a newsflash. Black people will never feel like they are equal. Slavery is used as a shield today. To me, 9 Christians were killed. The Lord's blood flows through all our hearts. And he would say to us, love thy neighbor as thyself. God bless. Well, I'm not quite sure what Rosemary's message is, but it's obvious that a lot of people are thinking about this. I want to leave race for a second because we have some good news, rare good news. It might have led the show some other time. They had a drone strike in Iraq, in Mosul, Iraq, and they think they killed the guy who engineered the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. So that's great. They killed this guy, Tariq bin al-Tahar bin, et cetera, bin, a Tunisian person of interest in the 2012 attack. And they got him when they fried targets near Mosul, the city in northern Iraq occupied by ISIS. So wouldn't that be nice? And I tell you, the one thing about the United States, just generally, we never forget. You know, we really got that down. Sometimes it takes years. It takes a long time. Bin Laden took 10 years. But we never forget. Once you cross that line and you screw with the United States, particularly an ambassador or a GI, but really those journalists who got their heads cut off, we'll come get you. We'll find you eventually. And they found this guy, a drone. I love those drones.
They are great.
I know that a lot of people don't like them, but I think they're fabulous. The best thing about them, they really are. I mean, they're not like a laser. They're not that good, but they're pretty damn good in terms of reducing collateral damage and taking out. They wait until they see the 4 guys go into the building and then they whack it. I just love it. I just think that this was a key planner of the Benghazi attack. And now, and a top planner of some of these suicide attacks, including the truck bombings in places like Ramadi, and now he's toast. Harzi.
You know, and we have some of America's smartest engineers at the controls of those engineers. And so much of it we always talk about when they strike somebody, but really it's the information we glom intelligence-wise from these drones. You know, the videotaping that they do up in the skies, that's how they trap these guys. I mean, if you think about who's at the controls, it's some of the smartest people in America at the controls.
You know, talking about drones, though, my brother-in-law went up. We were all in Cleveland for the weekend, Father's Day, at Erica's house up there. And Josh, Erica's brother, passed through with his family from D.C. They stopped there on their way to the reunion. They graduated from University of Michigan. Everyone was flying drones up there with GoPro cameras on them. Huh. So they had their big reunion in Michigan, flying the drones and the GoPro cameras. This guy lost control of his drone, came smashing into his children, bloodied up lips of his 7-year-old. I mean, I could just see a whole new legal front now you know, drone strikes, landing in the wrong place, smashing through people's windows is going to be a whole new area of the law. Technology run amok, your driverless car running through someone else's garage or something.
I see them all the time. I have this sort of view of Midtown Manhattan on this cliff where I live. And people fly drones around this cliff all the time. I mean, almost daily I see one.
But do you worry that they're peeping at you?
No, I think they're just people who want to, you know, snap pictures. I don't know. If they are peeping, I mean, good for them, you know?
Yeah. I'll whip it out.
Yeah, sure. I'll give them a show. Why not?
The truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
8 minutes to high noon. On this 23rd day of June, second day of summer, Tuesday, Gino in Brooklyn. I'm sorry, Gino in Forest Hills. What's up, man?
Gino from the Bronx.
Bronx. Hey, that Gino. Hey, Gino, what's up?
I don't have that kind of money like you do, Geraldo, to live there. Anyway.
You don't strike me as a tennis guy anyway.
Yeah, no. Football all the way.
All right.
Anyway, here's the deal. Every single Republican that has caved on amnesty for illegal aliens, on Obamacare, on homosexual marriage, on transgenderism, and now this stupid, idiotic non-issue about the Confederate flag is never going to get my vote. That includes the wonderful little lady that you think should now be on the ticket along with Jeb Clampett Bush. There's no way in hell I'm going to vote for anybody who doesn't meet my litmus test as a true total package conservative. That means you must be pro-life, pro-military, pro-law enforcement, and pro-traditional American cultural values. The Republican Party is batting 0-for-4 on all of that litmus test prongs that I have. And
let
they
me ask
have
you a
no
question.
Difference,
slow down, slow down.
No
me,
difference
let me
between
ask
them
let
and
me
the Bolsheviks that run the Democrat Party.
Are you ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
If it hurts people, why do you want to hurt people?
Because there's a thing, a pesky little thing called the First Amendment. It
so the First Amendment means that you could insult me?
And offensive
so what
speech.
About my First Amendment?
Yeah, what about it? Who cares? You got a microphone.
So what's your background?
You
do you
got
want me
a
to
microphone
hang a flag that insults your background?
To spew your stuff that I find offensive. Where's my First Amendment right? Where's my right
to say
I hate anything?
So you hate too much, man. That's your problem.
Come
Bill in Brooklyn. Hey, Bill.
Hey, Geraldo. First, let me just preface my remarks by saying that I have no sympathy for the institution of slavery.
Oh, thank goodness for that.
Okay.
Very progressive.
Okay.
I want to see where this car goes.
Well, you got my attention, Bill. Go ahead.
All right, well, hold on now. I want to... The South, okay? The Southern states.
Right.
They didn't create slavery. It was inherited. It was a British, Spanish, French, Dutch, whatever institution imposed on this continent. Not by white Americans who were living there.
Well, I don't know where you're getting the history from, but get to the point, Bill. You're saying
that the
South wasn't bad because they inherited slavery? They didn't invent it?
The institution. It was already there, set up.
Well, the problem with that assessment, let me tell you the problem with that assessment. The United States, the Britain and the British Empire, they all dropped slavery. As far as I recall, you could Google it. That's always the best way to do it. But it was the early 19th century, like the 18 teens. That's when the British dropped it. And then they passed the law that we could not import any more Africans to America's shores to be slaves. They stopped the slave trade. But you could breed slaves in the United States. So they effectively were using black women as breeders to create property that was represented wealth to the United States, and then from the north down, the cancer of slavery was abolished as people, you know, discovered the humanity of equality and started reading the language in the founding documents of the United States, and then as slavery was abolished, everyone knew that there would be tension because the South, an agrarian society, cotton and so forth, needed the free labor to make their profits to support the plantation system. So they seceded from the United States to protect their economic model. They recruited lots of Southerners who had nothing to do with slavery to fight on the issues of calling it states' rights and tradition and those hateful Northerners, as I recall it. President Lincoln and many others saw the collision coming. They predicted it would be an awful conflagration. It was the bloodiest war in American history. A million dead, I mean, like four times as many as in World War I or World War II, because both sides were American, obviously, even though one side had had left the Union, traitors that left the Union to support slavery. Now, if I were a politician then, I'm a middle-of-the-road person, what I would have done differently is I would have offered to pay to compensate the slaveholders, and I bet that would have made a difference. In other words, give them some... When you have a mindset that someone is property, then if you compensate them in some way, maybe there would have been less of the violence that rended us asunder, and 150 years later, we're still trying to patch things up. What a thing to talk about. What a big topic. What a summer it's going to be. I love you. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.